Good morning to everyone and welcome to the court. We have two cases today. The first case is United States v. Heiser. Captain Rim, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Sunduk, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Cox, and members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Carol Rim, and along with Mr. Scott Hockenberry, I represent the appellant, Private Connor Heiser. Your Honor, I request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
This court should set aside the findings of the Article 117 Alpha charge because a military judge abused her discretion in accepting appellant's improvident guilty plea. In analyzing the seventh element, this court should apply Wilcox to find that appellant's conduct did not have a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment because appellant's conduct was not directed at service members and appellant's broadcast was not likely to reach service members. As such, the facts relied upon by the military judge in accepting appellant's guilty plea were legally insufficient.
So are you agreeing that she was identifiable on the video? Are you conceding that point?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I didn't know just based on the point that you just raised.
Yes, Your Honor.
If I may then, based on the second point that you do seem to be raising in terms of the effect on the military environment, the victim here said she herself was distressed by it, and the victim herself was a member of the military. Is that sufficient?
It would not be sufficient here, Your Honor. So the first part about what the service member VG said about her emotional distress. That was presented to the court during the victim impact statement, which took place after the plea inquiry was completed. So the evidentiary basis for the guilty plea that the military had judge had considered was the stipulation and the colloquy. And so the victim impact statement, which then came later in time, and this court, as recently in Tyler, has said that that's not evidence, and this was an unsworn statement. For these reasons, the evidentiary basis could not consider what VG had stated.
So your point is that really wasn't before the court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Captain Rim, you've used the term evidence, but in a guilty plea, it's not really evidence, is it? I mean, you have a colloquy between the judge and the accused, and the judge is receiving information to support the attempt to plead guilty. And isn't it true that the military judge can consider everything he or she hears during the course of this guilty plea plus sentencing to determine whether or not there is or is not, or is there something inconsistent with the pleas? He or she can make that distinction or determination by looking at everything, can't they?
No, Your Honor, because that would go to the providency of the guilty plea.
Right, but what I'm asking you is that, for instance, suppose the military judge hears something inconsistent with the plea during sentencing. Isn't what's supposed to happen is the military judge is either supposed to clear that up or ask somebody about it, or, in other words, to be sure that what he's hearing is not inconsistent with what the accused is trying to plead guilty to?
Yes, Your Honor, and that didn't happen here at a much earlier point in time. The inconsistency.
I understand that. But I'm asking it because of your contention that the military judge can't consider what he or she hears later in the trial, in this case on sentencing, on the issue of whether or not the plea is provident.
Yes, Your Honor. So there are two points. First, Your Honor, the fact that any inconsistency coming from the victim impact statement, that's not the first inconsistency that this military judge overlooked. And secondly, what VG had described in the victim impact statement really go to the sixth element of the 117 Alpha charge. So even if this court were to find that there's no inconsistency, what she had described in the victim impact statement doesn't support what's necessary for the seventh element. And there's a difference there between the sixth and seventh element in that there is no inconsistency based on that analysis. Going back to the first inconsistency that the military judge overlooked, the stipulation in paragraph 19 talks about the three separate videos, which then become the basis for the three separate specifications. And there is discussion about the ring and a hair bun, and there is no hair bun and no ring in the video. So the videos are all different as to which of those elements are present or not present. And during the colloquy with the appellant asserts that there are both the ring and the hair bun in every single video. And so that should form the basis for every single specification. That's not true, but the military judge didn't clarify that on the record and just assumed this without reconciling those things, didn't discuss it on the record, and then simply moved on.
But I'm concerned about that. So you're saying that a military judge has to dig into minute details based on the representations by someone who is pleading guilty? I'm mindful of the CCA judge who decades ago said, after all, this is a guilty plea, folks. It seems as if the approach you're taking might transform what guilty pleas are all about in terms of requiring a military judge to engage in fact-checking of every single assertion made by an accused who is pleading guilty. Are my concerns misplaced?
Yes, Your Honor. It doesn't require that kind of broadness in terms of the consideration. This court in Moon has said, the providence of a guilty plea is based not only on the accused understanding a recitation of the factual history of the crime, but also on an understanding of how the law relates to those facts. And so here there is both a substantial basis to question the guilty plea, basis both in law and fact. Here it's very closely interwoven, although two separate bases for questioning. In terms of the identifiable piece, as well as the seventh element, which is problematic for the reasonably direct and palpable connection, the military judge has to know the law, understand what it is, and then have a conversation with the appellant about it in the colloquy to make sure that these things line up, what he's asserting as fact and what the actual law is. And so if in the context of a plea inquiry where there is a meeting of the minds toward providency and there is such a thin a basis for which there these elements could be met, and there is a failure even on that kind of limited assertions to try and just meet the basic elements, that would be problematic in that the identifiable piece that Your Honor had asked about and the fact that the ring and the hair bun, as small or minute details they may be, are the only things that the military judge is taking from the videos, which she did not actually consider for substantive consideration prior to accepting the guilty plea. It wasn't offered by the government until aggravation later during sentencing, and so she doesn't even have the actual videos themselves. She just has appellant's testimony about
it. But that's my concern. You seem to be saying that the military judge needed to research the issue of the hair bun and the ring and so forth.
No, Your Honor, except that if there is a stipulation of fact that they first consider and then they have it read through, and then the actual portion relating to charge 3, that portion of the stipulation is not very lengthy. And so if these two facts are the only things asserted,
they weren't correct. I mean,
the video, Your Honor, in terms of what the appellant is offering as what they purport to be.
Well, on the video, we had the accused using his last name. We had his photograph in the profile. There's reference to a wife. So why doesn't this all paint a clear picture of who is being displayed in the video?
If we're looking at, Your Honor, the four corners of the video itself, the points that Your Honor has just highlighted don't get us there. From the four corners of the video itself, it is not identifiable who these individuals are. Putting aside the issue of the ring or the hair bun for the moment, there's no facial recognition. There's nothing really identifiable about the body parts presented. It's difficult
to tell. But we don't have to limit ourselves to the four corners of the video.
Correct. So then this leads us to the second prong of identifiable, whether it's something that's broadcasted in connection. And so whether or not a username would be sufficient, whether or not a reference to a wife would be sufficient. First, being somebody's wife, which here might be true, it doesn't indicate what her name is. It doesn't identify the individual in a truly readily identifiable way. And that is a point of difference between government and the appellant.
Why isn't it sufficient that she could identify herself? As a member of the military, she says, that is me in this video.
Your Honor, so her being a member of the military goes to the seventh element, and right now if we're discussing identifiability for the third element, that's a slightly different consideration than the seventh element.
Well, any victim. Why wouldn't it be sufficient for any victim to be able to identify themselves in the video?
Yes, Your Honor. So the we had cited to in our reply brief a case from the Navy Corps in that the information that the broadcaster has of their own self would not be enough to meet a direct and palpable connection to the military environment, or it might not meet that the general public can identify who this individual is. And we are requesting
that. Where do you find that in terms of the statute or anything else that says it is not sufficient for the victim to be able to identify herself or himself in the video?
Your Honor, the explanatory materials are for Article 117 Alpha are not yet created, and so these terms are not yet identified by Congress. And so in looking to the Ninth Circuit, and the California Civil Code 3344, which deals with commercial misappropriation and the use of images in a wrongful way. And how do we tell who that image is of what? A useful definition for this court would be, a person shall be deemed to be readily identifiable from a photograph when one who views the photograph with the naked eye can reasonably determine that the person depicted in the photograph is the same person who is complaining of its unauthorized use.
These sound like great arguments that could have been made at trial before a jury when you're convincing them that she is not identifiable in the video beyond a reasonable doubt. But that's not what we're doing here. We've got a guilty plea. We have very different standards. We're looking for a substantial reason to overturn a guilty plea. And you're making arguments I think would have been great to make at trial if you wanted to contest the fact that she was identifiable. But again, that's not the kind of thing we're going to rely on to overturn a guilty plea.
Your Honor, if we were considering for an abuse of discretion here on appeal, I think it would be helpful to consider whether or not the facts as asserted by the appellant objectively support. And I think objectively support means that somebody of the general public can see it and agree that these things are true, and therefore the factual predicate is existed here.
Well, you raised a California case. Let me raise a California case. People versus Johnson, where that court held, quote, it is reasonably probable someone could recognize or otherwise determine the identity of the victim, even if that category of persons able to do so is limited to the victim. So there's competing case law out there. What can you point to specifically in terms of language in front of us that would cause this court to say it is not sufficient for the victim himself or herself to be able to identify himself or herself in the video? Not just based on what you think ought to be the situation.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, if it's okay with regard to the third element, may I come back and respond on rebuttal?
Sure.
Yes, Your Honor. But I would like to point out again that the identifiable piece that's problematic here is present for slightly different reasons in both the third element and in the seventh element. Your Honor, I'd like to...
Counsel, before you turn to another topic, could you go back to Wilcox? And you said that we should follow Wilcox and we should conclude that Wilcox is not satisfied here because the posting was not directed to and was not likely to reach the military. And I'm wondering where those elements come from, because Wilcox, of course, was a 134 case which involved the terminal elements, which had to be either service discrediting or contrary to good order and discipline. But 117 Alpha just has a test of connection. It doesn't have an impact requirement, at least not in the terms of the terminal element. So my understanding is the government says Wilcox is distinguishable on that ground. What's your response to the government's argument?
Yes, Your Honor, a couple of points here. So the first is Wilcox can't be distinguished because Congress had looked to Wilcox and lifted directly verbatim the language, reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military mission or military environment, and put it into Article 117 Alpha to meet their concern for a constitutional standard, in that there is underlying speech, they seek to regulate it, and they set up these seven elements that must be met, and the seventh element being that reasonably direct and palpable connection. It is very specific language and is taken directly from the case law. After there was a line of cases this court had decided, albeit in the 134 speech context, but prohibitions on speech, taken after Parker v. Levy, and this court was aware of the way that it intended to regulate speech and how it would be permissible in the military. For that first basis, Your Honor, Congress, knowing all of this, rejecting other bases of speech discussed within Wilcox, had deliberately taken this phrase and put it into 117 Alpha. So there's no way or reason to circumvent Congress's intent for the statute to be this way.
Why didn't they simply say in 117 Alpha that it has to be, quote, directed to or likely to reach the military? Why didn't they use that language, the language which you're relying on?
Your Honor, I think we could just look to the analysis itself, because there was a considerable portion of the Wilcox decision that had discussed in thorough detail, both for the post itself in Wilcox and both for the profile information it contained, and whether or not there was a connection to the military mission or environment, so what that military nexus connects to. And for that reason, I think the same analysis happens in both consideration for both of those things, for the post and for the profile information, that it should be looked at whether the appellant directed his speech at service members, and so whether here appellant broadcasted these videos to service members, or whether appellant had broadcasted the videos in a location, so in a website, in a forum, that's likely to reach service members.
Captain Graham, that does bring me back to a point that you're focusing on and with regard to Wilcox, and I understand why, and I see your time is running, and I hope the Chief Judge will indulge me here.
Absolutely.
But it's true, I mean, I understand why you're pointing to Wilcox, but you've set out the very distinction that I think that makes some sense in this case, which is Wilcox dealt with the regulation of speech, and you've admitted that that's the case. And so my question is, should the analysis be different when dealing with this language when you have a significant constitutional issue at hand, as opposed to a case like this one where there's no real constitutional issue involved? In other words, shouldn't we all understand why the court went through lengths to say what it said in Wilcox, because there was a significant constitutional issue there? Well, as opposed to this case where there, and quite remember, maybe you think there is one in this case, but my position is that there's not. And so should the analysis be different when dealing with this language? He'll give you the rest of your time.
No, it should not. And thank you, Your Honor. So I think, first, Your Honor, appellant is not bringing a facial challenge to the statute of 117.
I understand.
And so the reading that there is some sort of constitutional concern, there isn't a constitutional concern, really goes to what the framework should be. And that overlooks what the actual underlying basis of the speech is.
But that's what you're saying is that it doesn't make a difference whether it's a constitutional issue or not. Is that
No, that is not what I'm saying, Your Honor.
Okay.
Here, it's simply that the underlying speech here, which is the videos, in and of themselves are just private marital relations. There's nothing particular about them.
Didn't he make them into something other than that when he broadcasted them? Don't they lose their protection as speech, protected speech, or no?
So then this court and government mentions that in their brief. That's problematic because, one, as we talked about, it seeks to circumvent what Congress had intended to do in terms of how to define what is misconduct as relating to a broadcast. And they had already built in the constitutional statute. Two, that's in a roundabout way seeking to create this new class of unprotected speech, which SCOTUS is reluctant to do and they've cautioned against it. It's not necessary here. And specifically, government had cited to a case in their brief, State v. Van Buren, and it's a case from the Vermont Supreme Court, and they had asked, government there had asked the court to designate this broadcast itself as a new class of unprotected speech, and the Supreme Court in that case had specifically declined to do so, that they don't need to do that. They could just apply the current rules as the statute had dictated and still reach a reasonable conclusion.
So what's your position here, that this is protected speech or unprotected speech?
Your Honor, the broadcast itself and whether it's protected or unprotected doesn't need to be determined. The underlying speech is protected because it doesn't fall into one of the categories already recognized, such as obscenity or dangerous words or fighting words. And the underlying basis is what would trigger the 117 analysis because there was a broadcast of something that's not unprotected. So looking at two different bases of speech, I think the difference there is government is asking for a new kind of basis of rule based on the broadcast itself. We're saying we are already complying with 117 alpha just to look at the underlying basis, applying the seven elements as 117 alpha requires. Wilcox demands that the seventh element be a review of how it was broadcasted, in the whether he directed it and where he posted it to. Okay. For those reasons, the plea is improvident.
Can I ask one question? Counsel, in distinguishing Wilcox, you said that here we don't have a speech or a broadcast that is directed at members of the military. Well, isn't it directed at the victim? I mean, here he took an action of broadcasting this, and he says he did it to cause her anxiety and embarrassment. It seems like she was exactly the target of his action, and that he hoped people in her work environment might see it, think less of her, or at least she would be worried that they would see it and think less of her. Wasn't that, even by your standard, isn't that an action that he took directed at the military?
No, Your Honor. If you logically apply the Wilcox analysis, if he directed it at a service member, that means that he sent it to her. He sent it to another member, either text, email, something direct. And technological advances these days make it too easy to directly send somebody something. And that's not what happened here. Directed at means, was it communicated directly to another service member would be one way to look at it. Here, VG knew the username already and just on her of her own accord, looked this up and was able to find it. The fact that it did happen, it's just that it's possible, but it doesn't make it likely, and it wasn't directed at her.
Well, how would he cause her anxiety or embarrassment?
Yes, Your
Honor. If his intention isn't for her to discover it or know about it or hear about it.
So the intent that appellant had for emotional distress or harm of that nature goes to the sixth element. And the requirement there is a know or reasonably should have known. And so the fact that he had an intent to emotionally distress certainly can meet that sixth element in full. However, the emotional harm that she suffered is a separate thing from how she is, her status as a service member. And the status of a service member merely is not enough to meet the seventh element. If it were merely enough, we'd have a result where in every case it would be met because the appellant is a service member, so that could be a reasonably direct and palpable connection. And that would be an absurd result. If service member were to be enough, Congress knows how to craft victim-specific crimes. They've done it for officer, they've done it for sentinel, they've done it for child, and they didn't do it for service member. It's a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military mission or military environment, and there's no further showing on the record about what that connection is between the service member status and service member's duties, military environment, or military mission. Here, appellants specifically chose military environment. They go into a colloquy about the 134 context. Judge Maggs had asked earlier about impact. It first comes up because the military judge had used the word in the colloquy. It first comes up in the discussion of the seventh element in specification one. So you think this might have had a negative impact on the military community. And then they proceed to use that interchangeably between connection and impact, both in specification two and both in specification three and for all three of those specifications. There was a lot of confusion here on the military judge's part, first calling the element vague and then offering some sort of other word to mean connection, not applying Wilcox, and so there is a confusion as to what the law should be, what context should be, and the colloquy that appellant had mentioned being something to the nature of a 134 service discrediting analysis, which then also government has said the 134 context shouldn't apply. If that's the case, there's no basis to find that the plea was provident.
Any further questions from Michael? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Cox, members of the court, may it please the court. Good morning. My name is Captain Jennifer Sunduk, and with my co-counsel, Major Mark Robinson, we represent the United States. The military judge did not abuse her discretion in accepting appellant's guilty plea to three specifications of Article 117 Alpha. This case, where appellant broadcasts sexually explicit videos in order to humiliate a service member victim, is a paradigm case that Article 117 Alpha was created to punish. The record of trial indicates that the victim is identifiable in the visual images and by information displayed in connection with the visual images. This conduct had a direct and palpable connection to a military environment because the victim is a service member and because the appellant intended other service members to see the video. Beginning with the first half.
So, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
With this case, does the government want this to be seen as a guilty plea case, or does the government want this to be seen as a cutting-edge revenge porn case?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important that this was a guilty plea and that the court is looking at what was elicited in the record of trial to see if there's an adequate factual basis to show that the military judge did not abuse her discretion. And it's very clear here that there is an adequate factual basis that was elicited from the military judge to meet the identifiable element and the direct and palpable element. So I'm not really sure, actually, Your Honor, if I understand your question, if you could clarify.
Well, I'm wondering whether you're looking for a one-off. In other words, are you looking for us, this court, to say just that under this scenario where you've got these specific factual circumstances that are unique to this case, that in the guilty plea context, the government prevails? Or are you looking for this court to make a broader pronouncement about what this statute means?
I understand, Your Honor. Certainly the former, but indeed the latter as well. So beginning with...
there we have it.
Yes, Your Honor. Beginning with identifiable.
Well, if I could then.
Yes, Your Honor.
If the government would like us to make this a case about revenge porn, do you want us then to essentially let the case law in this area grow organically, where we would say these circumstances in this case meet the elements of the offense? Or do you want this court to make a broader pronouncement about what essentially reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment or mission means?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, before you answer that, I'm going to ask you what you think we should be saying as a court.
Of course, Your Honor. So, yes, the government would like you to give broad guidance regarding what is identifiable and what is a direct and palpable connection in the context of an Article 117 alpha offense, which is different than a freedom of speech case.
So what would you, the government's position, what would you like this court specifically to say to provide guidance to the field about what that provision means?
Yes, Your Honor. So whenever there is a service member victim in the context of Article 117 alpha, there is always going to be a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment. That's because when you look at an Article 117 alpha case, the thing that distinguishes it from freedom of speech cases is that there is a human victim. There is not human victims in these other cases, in Wilcox, in Parker v. Levy, in U.S. v. Priest. We have a human victim here. So with these freedom of speech cases, there's always the danger of military morale or the mission being impacted, or the public's perception of the military being impacted. And we have that in Article 117 Alpha 2, but we also have a human victim. And there's potential harm to that human victim. So because of that inherent harm to a human victim, when this person is a service member, there is always a direct and palpable connection to a military environment. Additionally, the fact...
Let me... The criminality in this statute is the publication with either the intent or with you should reasonably know that you're going to embarrass and humiliate, blah, blah, whatever's in 117 alpha. What relates it to the military offense, similar to 134, is that it has that direct and palpable impact. What you're saying could be very narrow, to answer the Chief Judge's question. You could have a very narrow holding, just as when the accused is a member of the military, and the victim is a member of the military, and the accused does it with intent to embarrass that military member, that's enough, period. End of inquiry. You don't have to decide whether he intended somebody else to see it or anything else.
Your Honor, that's exactly correct. So in this case, because there is a service member victim, this court could stop here and find that that element has been satisfied, that there is a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment. But there's other ways that appellant's conduct showed a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment, and that's because he intended other service members to see the video. So this court could find two independent reasons that appellant's conduct in this case had a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment. And that's similar to Wilcox and the other freedom of speech cases. In Wilcox, the individual had no intent for his speech to reach service members. So that's key in distinguishing Wilcox from the case here. Appellant did want to reach service members. He wanted to humiliate the victim by having people she worked with, other military members, see this video. That intent is enough as long as the other elements of 117 alpha are established. Of course, one of the elements is either broadcasting or distributing the video. So that, in conjunction with his intent that other service members see the video, that is enough for a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment.
Counsel, I ask you to respond to one point that counsel for the appellant made, which was that we can't properly consider the statements that Specialist VG made during sentencing. Is that correct?
I would agree with that, Your Honor, because it occurred after the military judge accepted the plea. So you can consider it to the effect that it is not inconsistent with the facts that were elicited during the Providence inquiry. It, in fact, bolsters the fact that there was a direct and palpable connection to a military environment, but only a connection is required. There doesn't have to be an actual impact. So, of course, the fact that she was harmed indisputably, that shows that there is a direct and palpable connection to a military environment, but that is not required because the element only requires a connection. So to answer your question, yes, the court should consider it, but only for the fact that it does not contradict anything that was elicited during the Providence inquiry.
Thank you.
Regarding identifiable.
Counsel, I hadn't looked at these these cases in a long time, but before the Solario case was decided, given military courts-martial broad jurisdiction over military members. I think the Relford case said that one element that you could consider to give jurisdiction to the court was that the victim was also a service member. That created, quote, service connection. So don't we have a similar analogy here that you have when the victim is another military member, you have service connection, i.e., direct impact on the military environment?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor, and that's the government's position. Because we have a service member victim, there is always going to be a direct and palpable connection to a military environment in the context of Article 117 Alpha.
Counsel, can you also respond to appellant's argument that there was an unresolved inconsistency that appellant said that the hair bun and the rings were visible in the videos, and they were not visible in all the videos?
Yes, Your Honor. So they are visible in the video, and I can provide you with the time hacks. This is Prosecution Exhibit 3. So the ring is visible at minute 129 and 136, and then the hair is visible at 609 and 639.
Thank you.
And I'll also address that there are three different videos, and the hair is visible in one video, the ring is visible in another video, but these three videos are actually the same course of conduct. It's just split into three different videos. The appellant explains this in his Providence inquiry. So just because the hair is only visible in one video, the ring is only visible in another video, there are three different videos, but they're really all the same video. So if she is identifiable by her hair or ring in one part of the video, she's identifiable in all of the videos. So this identifiable element just requires that someone somewhere can identify the victim based on something in the video or based on information displayed in connection with the video. There's no requirement that she be readily identifiable or easily identifiable or identifiable by name or face. The word is just identifiable.
Counsel, on that specific point, I think the counsel for appellant said should be identified by a reasonable person as opposed to, and you said somebody could identify. Which is the correct interpretation of those words?
Yes, Your Honor. The word is just, the element says only that the victim is identifiable. The plain meaning of that is that someone somewhere can identify the victim. So as long as it's actually based on information in the visual image, like in this case, her hair bun, her ring, or information displayed in connection with the visual image. In this case, the username of appellant, which is his last name and initials, his profile picture, his face, and the description of wife in all three of the videos. So as long as there's something external that someone is looking at and pointing to explain why they are able to identify the victim, then that's enough. And that's what's different from U.S. v. Page. In that case, only the broadcaster identified the victim in the image, and it was based on information he knew previously, not on information that accompanied the broadcast of the image. And the image had nothing distinctive in it. Like here we have the hair and the ring are distinctive. There was absolutely nothing in Page. So in Page, the broadcaster was able to identify the victim based on things he knew previously, not based on the image itself, not based on information displayed in connection with the visual image. So as long as the identification is based on something in the visual image or something displayed in connection with the visual image, then this element is satisfied.
Counsel, I have a question. So I think counsel for the appellant was right, that the history of the direct and palpable language, this court came up with that language to prevent Article 134 from being unconstitutionally vague. Then the president picked up on it and put it in the manual for court-martial, and then the Supreme Court noticed it and cites it in Parker v. Levy as one of the reasons why Article 134 is constitutional. So Congress picks up on the language and they put it in Article 117 Alpha. So it must mean something. So as it's used here, does the government believe there is a difference between a connection to the military mission and environment and a direct and palpable connection to the military mission and environment?
So, yes, Your Honor.
And can you articulate what the difference is? Like, how do we know when we've gone beyond just a connection to a direct and palpable connection?
Of course, Your Honor. So direct means that this is something perceptible. It's very clear. The connection is clear. Palpable would mean capable of being felt, so not actual being felt because no impact is required. So if conceivably there could be an impact or an effect on a military mission or environment, then that is a palpable connection. So here, because we have a military member as the victim, inherently that's a connection to a military environment because this could cause her harm, this could be degrading to her morale, this could cause other military members to lose respect for her. So obviously this is something that could impact the military environment. But again, because only a connection is required, we don't need to actually show the impact or effect.
And we discussed earlier what the standard should be. Almost, you know, if the suggestion is made that maybe it ought to be a per se rule if you have a military member who's a victim, that's all that's enough. Is that all that's enough, or do we need some suggestion? It could be in the plea colloquy, it could be from the victim, that there is some embarrassment or anxiety. I mean, I hate myself for the example, but let's say we have a couple who've posted thousands of videos, and then they break up or they have a fight or whatever, and then the accused posts another one. She doesn't care. Or there's no suggestion in the record that she cares. It's just one more in a thousand. Like, does that create a problem, or do we just have a per se rule that because of the nature of this crime, any military victim, no matter what other circumstances may exist, that's enough?
Yes, Your Honor. So it's the government's position that this, the service member being a victim is enough. There doesn't need to be actual harm. Even if the victim says she is not actually harmed from this, it is the conduct itself, regardless of the actual impact or effect. The success of whether the individual does actually humiliate the person or get the result that he wanted is irrelevant. And I quote from Priest there, where this court said, the lack of success is not the criterion, for the government is entitled to protect itself in advance. So clearly, this is conduct that can have a grave detrimental impact on a military environment when there is a service member victim. And regardless of whether this impact manifests, the government is entitled to protect itself because the danger of this impact is too great. So to conclude, there is nothing in the record of trial that raises a substantial basis to question appellant's guilty plea. The victim is identifiable by the visual image and by information displayed in connection with the visual image. There is a reasonably direct and palpable connection to a military environment because the victim is a service member and because the appellant intended service members to view this video. This conduct is the very evil that Article 117 Alpha seeks to punish. And this court should affirm the findings and sentence of the lower court. Thank you.
Counsel.
Your Honor, the discussion about whether the reasonably direct and palpable connection could be met by the status of the service member alone, or whether it would be an intent that meets that requirement. For two separate things. First, to the extent that that is the direction in which this court intends to choose, the rule of lenity requires that it is the ambiguity that was present at the time of the appellant's case. Those things should be favorably resolved for the appellant, and so that it would not be at issue with regard to the plea inquiry that is improvident. It is such a severe modification of the statute as 117 Alpha was crafted by Congress. It completely changes the requirement of specifically element 6 from just know or reasonably should have known to an intent, in which some case it may be met, in some cases it may not. That is something radically different. If there was ever an area of jurisprudence in which to tread carefully and with narrow scope, I think speech in the general area of regulating that speech, this would be one of those instances of that a narrow scope is what is required here, not just in line with our general practice, but also because that is not what Congress had intended. Congress had intended 117 alpha to incorporate the Wilcox analysis, which is, as we have already stated, the direction of the speech, how it was directed, whether it was directed, and an indication of that, what likely to be reached, is the forum that the appellant chose for his broadcast. Your Honor, the government had mentioned about the ring and the video, and it's really that there's one video. However, there are three specifications here, three separate instances of misconduct that was alleged and then charged and found. So there, that is not logical and compatible in and of itself. One moment, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think in the government's argument about the status of the service member alone not being alone being sufficient to meet both the sixth and seventh elements of the offense, they had failed to show what, in addition, was the direct and palpable connection. They've just reworded the element to meet it, and therefore they haven't set it, put forth a test that is in line. Under stare decisis, this court has no reason to set aside Wilcox. It's not been shown to be unworkable. It's not been shown to be poorly reasoned. And the intervening event, which is critical.
I see your time has expired. Could you please?
Yes, Your Honor.
Conclude. Any questions from the court? Please conclude quickly.
Yes, Your Honor. The intervening event, which is critically notable here, is that 117 alpha was passed by Congress with the specific context in mind of Wilcox and 117 alpha. Applying the Wilcox analysis, this appellant's plea was improvident. The military judge abused her discretion, and this court should set aside the findings for charge three. Thank you.
The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court is adjourned until 10:45.